this on silent.
That's fine. We're live now. We're going.
Okay.
So I can cut out. I can cut the beginning.
You can just go with it. Yeah, we can cut wherever. Because it's not going to be just me being an asshole going, "Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast."
Today we're going to be breaking down Fight to Win Pro 53 in Maryland, as well as some new judo rules. So initially, Fight to Win Pro 53, hosted in Frederick, Maryland, started off with 8 or 9 purple belt matches, followed by 9 to 10.
Maybe someone should learn how to count first before he says 8 or 9. There's 8 purple belt matches, followed by 10 brown belt matches and 12 black belt matches.
Overall, a really good card. Total payout for the card was just shy of $33,000, $32,606, which is a pretty decent payout for a submission grappling card, especially in 2017. Always good to see the athletes getting paid. Just good things all around.
Seth actually has a goal of paying out all of the athletes a total of $1 million. They're hoping to hit the $1 million mark in payouts. So kudos to him. I'm one of those people that gets some of that money occasionally. So all for people getting paid, whether you're that high-level black belt or just random guy from random town competing on one of the cards.
So
bang through these things. Right. Grappling rewind.
So we're really going to quickly go through the purple belt matches here.
Just anything that really stood out, like people losing matches that they shouldn't have lost, people not finishing submissions that they shouldn't have finished, like match one, where Zimmerman could have finished the match about 7 million times. I don't know. He kept driving backwards when he had the Darce Anaconda, whatever position he was in. At the time, I was looking from the changing area, which was above the ring, down. But he kept backing up and not locking it in. So he didn't finish it, but he was dominant the entire time.
Wins via decision.
Yeah. That was what you see a lot with Fight to Win, which is not against them. You only have X amount of time to finish. You see a lot of decisions. Some of them are exciting. Some of them, which we will get to later, blow. It was terrible. After the first match, I disappeared briefly and was warming up, so Maine over here will probably be filling in some of the details that I left out when it comes to this.
Match two, James Dunn wins basically via good positional work, strong dominant position, wins a decision. Match three, Ty is what I'm going to pronounce his name as.
Tadaya.
Yeah, wins a pretty controversial decision over a purple belt.
Jared Bosk. I've trained with Team Conquest before and his older brother, Kai. I know Jared's a good wrestler. He had that sweet ankle pick at the beginning. But it was a lot of back and forth, and the referees, you know, I'm not going to say what they saw or not saw. They just went the other way. There was some good submission attempts, back and forth, a lot of positional changes. So I can't say 100% for sure what they were looking for, but they gave it to Tadaya. So we'll leave it at that. I'm not going to question them at the moment on any decisions. Moving on to match four.
To match four, we had
Huntman versus Ortiz, which that was, I actually don't think it was Huntman. It was Johnson, which Maine has kindly written down. That was a last-minute replacement, supposedly the night before, according to one of Ortiz's training partners.
And Johnson wins with a fast wrist lock from top side.
Yeah, so Johnson was a late replacement because the previous opponent, who I'm assuming is Huntman, got the flu the day of weigh-ins. I don't know how that magically appears. I know the flu is prevalent, but get your flu shots, kids. Doesn't cause autism.
Match five, between
LaSalle and Robertson. That was my first match where I was kind of shocked how the judges chose how they pick winners. LaSalle was the aggressor from the beginning, Robertson pulled guard and stayed there and then played guard.
Yeah, there wasn't really a whole lot of passing.
There wasn't a lot of sweep attempts. There was a lot of pressuring from LaSalle. Got to over under, got through to half guard
once.
It's like two times, maybe three, but it was pressuring forward. And when it comes down to that, personally, as a referee, when somebody's actually like looking to go and trying to sweep and trying to come up and still ends up no advantages, no anything, and you're left with that terrible decision of having to pick somebody, when somebody is more aggressive moving forward, you normally go with that person. But again, you know, I wasn't one of the refs, so I can't say for sure. And yeah, that was that.
Hold up.
We're back in.
Cool. So as Maine so kindly put for the next matches, note details. Edwin has a head tattoo. If I'm not mistaken, and I think I know where he trains, I'll have to ask him. Look like a Full Metal Alchemist tattoo. Shout out to all you anime nerds out there that are going to make fun of me.
He also had a BJJ patch from Reddit.
Yeah,
which is
so,
kind of cool to see.
Also, you know, dorky people of the internet unite there.
And Joseph wins a decision, basically via mount.
Ooh, and then right here, Lori Porsche from Beta and Morgan Beverly from Roots, which is an Atos affiliate. It's, what's the tiny dude's name? He's been on like five, he lost to Kaio in like 15 seconds in the fight to win, and then he beat Josh in like 2 minutes.
Looking at this, I'm looking at him, I can't get the name.
Zach something.
Yeah.
It's Zach something, and it's going to bother me, and I'm going to yell about it in 15 minutes that I remembered his name. But he also did some of the announcing and screwed it up, which was hilarious during the card. Morgan stole that one away and nabbed the knee bar.
Mm-hmm. That was a double toe hold attempt at one point in the match. You know, interesting match, good back and forth.
Man, dead air.
Terrible. I'm trying to like give information about the competitors, and I took terrible notes. I was trying to do it on the fly because I was trying to like get the information.
To watch.
I was trying to get the information that they were announcing as they walked out.
Yeah.
Into the notes because I have someone finished knee bar 4-0 and fight to win. So yeah, Morgan Beverly from Atos is 4-0 and fight to win at this point. Undefeated. Looked good. Will it be interesting to see how she matches up in the future, as I assume that we'll see her on the upcoming fight to win cards.
Probably in the Jersey area, being is that her. Excuse me, her gym is based in that general area, and they always do title fights for each belt level, actually, which is pretty cool.
Match eight.
Dakota Wider versus Tyler Murphy from Team Cal. Weirdest name ever. You couldn't think of anything better than Team Kyle. Kyle what? Kyle who? Does this person have no arms and legs? Is it a redheaded Jew from Colorado town? We don't know. But it's Team Kyle.
Wins via heel hook in about a minute.
Quick ones.
After that, we move on to the brown belt matches.
Ooh.
A match that was scheduled for match 9 actually occurred after match. It was scheduled for match 10.
So we went with the Maggie Garmory from Big Brothers and Alexandra Coleman from Ground Control.
Another local gym.
It's right around the corner from our gym, actually. And from these notes, Coleman via Kimura. Oh, via sub attempts. I don't know. Maine's note-taking is garbage.
So let's actually redo that whole thing, because that just makes no sense. You can't use any of that. You announce it back in, the names, because you're really good on the names.
Okay. So we're going back to match 9 now, jumping from match 10?
Match 10. So okay, match 10 that actually occurred.
So match 10, which was match 9. So Maggie Garmory from Big Brother versus Alexandra Coleman from Ground Control. I can't talk, and I'm Tony the Tiger. So apparently again, this is getting closer towards my match, so I was paying less and less attention to what was going on. But Alexandra wins by most sub attempts.
Decision.
Decision, obviously. Now we can get into a little bit more detail because at this point I'm just cooling down and I can talk about people because I've competed against them or I'm really friendly with them. So we had match 11, 200-pound brown belt gi match, Mateo Nunes from MR Barbosa.
We skipped one.
Oh, we skipped did. Nine. We switched the Charles Gamble fight, son of a...
So the Charles Gamble match actually took place after match 10, so it was actually match...
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And Charles Gamble is a giant man. How he made 200 pounds, I have no idea. Supposedly, he's fought at 205. I still find that hard to believe. He comes into our gym occasionally and trains, and he is enormous. He was against Darren Costa. There we go. Can talk. From Alliance. I think that one's based out in Harford County because it is a Maryland gym. It was a nice little back and forth. Both guys had big pickups, some, you know, belly to back stuff, some takedowns, back and forth. And
we have Charles Gamble hits a big Harigoshi, and Darren hits a big suplex throw.
Yeah. And, yeah,
and it ended up with
Darren with the decision, which he started picking up afterwards. He started really kicking in the hustle after that. I've seen him compete before, and he's a good hustler. He moves it, so hats off to him. Now jumping back to match 11, 200-pound brown belt gi match, Mateo Nunes from MR Barbosa Jiu-Jitsu versus Josh Madison from Clinch Martial Arts. I have experience with Mateo. I competed against him when I was really fat. And from competing against him, he's got a good open guard, good lasso, good spidering techniques, you know, a la MR Barbosa, obviously. So that match started. And from my vantage point up top, it goes. Nice, nice takedown by Mateo, who's got really good judo as well. And the match stops. And I thought at first that Josh had got cut. And then we noticed that Mateo's head was erupting like a fire hydrant. And, you know, so we're sitting there waiting.
And I was about probably about 5 to 10 feet away from the match. And I saw as soon as the takedown happened, Mateo's head was cut. And I was wondering, okay, apparently they're just going to let it go. Because I saw that there was a bunch of blood coming out of his head, and they let it go for probably about an additional 20 seconds before the ref steps in and they realize that Mateo is leaking a significant amount of blood onto his white gi and into the face of the gentleman he's competing against.
AIDS. Yeah, that's one thing where I know this would cost more money, and it's some of the stuff is, I'm not going to say this is on the fly because again, Seth and his entire team put a hell of a lot of work into this, but there are no blood testing going on. So hopefully nobody's like, hey, I don't have a communicable disease. Psych. But
eventually the medic comes
ambling down the walkway and they start poorly taping up Mateo. It would have been smarter to bring your whole little kit, clean it up, try to gob it up with a little bit of Vaseline at least or something, gauze it and start wrapping it properly. Mateo should have looked like a really cheap looking mummy. Instead, he just had a Karate Kid headband for a little bit.
They gave him electrical tape and they taped electrical tape to his head with what looked like bathroom napkins.
Ooh.
And they restarted the match.
From there, Mateo was just dominant, just, you know, working from half guard, trying to pass through, eventually getting past, mounting, losing his head wrap.
Sets up a really nice loop choke at one point, super deep. At that point, the ref continues to wipe the mat where Mateo is dripping blood. And then at certain points, we'll wipe the mat and then wipe Mateo's head and continue the match. With about 44 seconds left in the match, they pause the match because Mateo's head wrap has come off and he's bleeding a bit much everywhere at this point. And the medic comes back out with some duct tape at this point. Duct tapes his head properly so that he's not going to bleed more.
Fixes and, everything.
And then the match finishes. Mateo wins a, you know, pretty clean decision.
A dominant decision.
Of all the matches I've ever seen, this is the bloodiest gi match I've ever seen. We have some photos, and I assume there's some photos up online.
Oh, yeah, you can find
of Mateo's gi. A great match overall, but I've never seen a white gi that bloody.
If you find Mike Calambas, I hope I'm saying that right, he's got those pictures up there, so you'll be able to check that. I'm pretty sure that's at Mike Calambas Photography on Instagram. Maybe it's just Mike Calambas, but you'll be able to find it. Moving on, the promoter pulled double duty. Seth Daniels from Easton BJJ took on Eric McDugno. Jesus Christ, I can't read.
From Bauerhouse.
Seth, if I'm not mistaken, what trained at the Olympic Training Center for judo, was a high-level judo player, and is known for his foot sweeps. I believe he calls the one that he eventually ended up hitting the Rick James. That's what he calls it, the Rick James.
Foot sweep.
Beautiful. He leads, the matches your leg, leads, reaches out, sweeps, and does a nice little spin, and then comes in. Surprisingly, it took him a few times to actually hit it, and then he finally nailed it, went after it hard, and hit a beautiful calf slicer.
Toe hold, I think.
Calf slicer.
Really?
Calf slicer.
Okay.
He talked about it right afterwards when he came down from the walkway. Definitely a calf slicer. Fantastic submission.
Fun match. Quick match, too.
Quick. About then a minute he gets on the some mic. Change. Gets on the mic, starts promoting jiu-jitsu like the awesome person that he is. Just starts pushing it, telling people, train jiu-jitsu. It's amazing. I'm going to agree with that, obviously. I've been doing it for 11 years now. It's November, so 11 years. So, yeah, do that. Train jiu-jitsu. Have fun. Come out to Fight to Win shows. Support them. Here it comes, folks. Here comes the most boring match in Fight to Win history. It edged out my previous match at Fight to Win for most boring match, where I got laid on top of and couldn't do anything. Shout out to Edward McKay for keeping me inside control and keeping my fat ass pinned to the mat.
Back when Josh was around 200 and...
I weighed in at 219 for that one. It was a 220 match. But hey, I cut weight for that from 240. So I was still really fat. But
we'll get into Josh's weight loss here
later.
We'll speak about his match in a few matches here.
Yeah. So this is Kamal Shalarus, yes, the MMA fighter, fighting at 195 pounds. The guy fought MMA this year at 155 and decided, hey, this is a great idea to fight a no-gi match 40 pounds up. He looked soft. S-A-W-F-T, soft.
Also no rash guard, so I think he was one of the few guys on the card that actually pulled the rash guard off, ADCC.
And let the donuts out. And versus Tim Dawson, who I am also familiar with, had a match when we were blue belts. Strong, awesome dude, super friendly. Kamal Shalarus didn't want to have anything to do with a grappling match, apparently. He signed up thinking that he was going to punch somebody, I guess. I don't know. But he did fuck all. I hate being disparaging against competitors, but he literally did nothing.
Yeah, they were going for takedowns, and then Dawson would attempt a takedown, if the takedown didn't happen, Dawson would go to the ground, he would sit, and then he would look forward to Kamal to engage on the ground. At a certain point in the match, Kamal actually walked away and turned his back to Dawson. I'm not actually certain what the rules are for stand-up or stand-ups or onus to engage on the ground. But eventually, Tim Dawson would stand back up and they would go through takedowns again. This match actually got some boos from the crowd, which is something I did not hear any other time in the event.
There was hissing as well. There was booing and hissing. Audible hissing, which was amusing. Tim tried to pull to get him to come in. He kept going for, he tried to grab the leg. He was doing everything he could. And from what I gathered, so this is secondhand information, it's not always 100% accurate. Kamal then told Tim after the match, after he lost by a split decision, which confused me because he shouldn't have gotten any nod for doing anything. He told Tim that he fucked him up. I don't know which planet or dimension he was in where he thought he saw that, but yeah, that was not good. Tim was not happy with the performance. Threw his shoes as he came down the steps, and was just in general pissed, as anyone should be, that somebody came to not compete. And this brings us to
Mr. Weinstock's match.
My match, which I'm going to be hypercritical about because I'm hypercritical of myself. I'm going to be disparaging and say I'm absolutely horrible. This match took place at 175. Again, we keep talking about how fat I was. I'm still a fat kid on the inside. Last Fight to Win match I had was in April of this year, 2017. And I weighed in again at 220, 219, and I cut from 240.
Previous to that,
I got really fat because I thought powerlifting was super awesome. You're going to have to cut out that.
When I met Josh a few years ago, he was roughly about 280 plus pounds.
286 at the peak, almost three bills.
So in under 2 years, he's dropped about 100 plus pounds.
111 pounds to be exact.
And in the commentary, it's very interesting because they mention that Josh's previous match occurred at a
super heavyweight
bracket.
Shout out, by the way, to Jay Reichelbudo, who is an excellent commentator. Anytime you get to hear him, listen to him. Very knowledgeable. Awesome dude. At SmashPassJ on Instagram, if you ever want to check him out. Always posting interesting motivational stuff, or him being up at 6 o'clock in the morning training, which is something that you should all do. Back to this tomfoolery. I came out ready to rock and roll. John came out ready to rock and roll. And man, was I not expecting him to fire that quickly. You're going to hear this a lot on this, that I've competed against or know a lot of these people. I competed against John when I first got my purple belt years ago, and he started off a little slow, took his time, tried to shoot in, you know, takedowns, and I have mediocre takedown defense, mediocre wrestling in general. It somehow has done me well over the years. But I did not expect him to move at that speed. And he shot in a single, outside single, and ripped that one down really quick, got around in my half guard, and immediately just started the pressure. This was a big thing for all of Lloyd Irvin and his affiliate schools. They came out hard, quick, and heavy. And John was trying to rip my head off.
Immediately moves into a Japanese necktie.
Starts going for neckties, switching to darces, just crank, 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 which helped him back up and lift up the knee to pop up to get into a great passing position, which he did. Started to go through, passed, went around, was attempting a few things, settled in north-south briefly, tried for a key lock, immediately came over knee on belly, went to mount. Again, this is making me sound terrible. Which I would generally agree with. He changed positions again as I was trying to trap the leg and went for a mounted triangle. I was not going to have any of that because I was not going to be able to get out of that. So I rolled my fat, lumpy ass over and got him on the ground and immediately thought, I'm going to powerbomb this guy. I'm going to make this look like a straight-up pro wrestling match. Fortunately for him, he's not an idiot. And knew, hey, I should hook the leg, which he did. So I maybe got him 2.5 feet off the ground. From there, I was like, it's party time. Let's go. Dropped him down, immediately looked to pass. He rolled, started moving, trying to attack the legs, which is, in no-gi anyways, my thing. I love playing footsie with people, getting, you know, tangled up, letting people mess around, trying to do that. Transitioned into a knee bar, which I was told later that was, you know, fairly tight, not tight enough because I was dumb enough not to finish it. So went for that, went for heel hook, went for toe hold, tried to come up on the calf slicer, tried to come up. He got up again, fired quicker than I did. And that was, again, the pace of the match was he was firing and I was hesitating. He comes in back to the half guard. I'm hesitating because I'm like, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. Meh. Or as he starts to come in, I'm like, ooh, I should probably invert. And then I just sort of shrimped into him. And he just locked up a darce. And I was like, wow. Kurt Oceander would have said, you fucked up a long time ago. And I did. And he darced me. And I am not going to embarrass myself or my wife who is there. Or my brother. Or my teammates by doing the Harlem Shake on the ground because I'm unconscious. So I tapped. So hats off to John. He was, you know, super friendly, super nice guy, very complimentary on me not being fat anymore, which I appreciate. I'm a sucker for all the guys that give me nice compliments. It makes me feel pretty. So
on John Del Bruge, they announced during the broadcast that he was a Brazilian national champion. Do you have any other information on that?
Again, if you follow jiu-jitsu, and this has nothing to do with anything else other than jiu-jitsu, Lloyd gets his guys everywhere. He makes sure his dudes compete, his ladies compete everywhere. Doesn't matter where it is. They're going there. If you're ready to jump on the train and be part of that team and go at it, he'll be there for you. And I'm pretty sure John has been down to Brazil to compete in the Brazilian Nationals. I know a lot of other guys have been there. I know JT was down there when he was with him. That's one of the times that he beat Lapri in the gi, no less. Lapri or Lang? Lapri, because Lange he had beaten before. Lapri, I think he bow and arrow choked him. That's, you know, that's the way back machine as well. But those guys have been all over the place. You know, DJ, Tim Spriggs, all those guys you see him popping up there. Brazil, Europe, Korea, just all over the world, Japan, wherever. They're competing all the time. They're getting help, not only from sponsors, but Lloyd is pushing that money in to make sure that he has a homegrown American team that is eventually going to produce a black belt gi world champion. That is completely American homegrown, not like under Brazilian tutelage, anything like that. And those guys are getting really, really close. I don't think DJ's competing in the gi anymore, so I don't think that's going to happen with him. But from the looks of some of these competitors, like Jamil Hill, like Array Alexander, like Tim Spriggs, like Ty Murphy, these guys are still competing in the gi and going to these big competitions and just hustling and beating people that you don't think that they should beat, or losing matches where it makes you think maybe you shouldn't have lost that. So again, awesome, awesome match. He was awesome. He was definitely the better guy tonight. And, you know, if we competed again, he might be the better guy that night. I don't know. It was fun. I had a good time. Can't complain. Made mistakes. I've already written notes. I've already yelled at myself, to myself, out loud. Fortunately, no one was around. I think I was super crazy. Yeah, that was the end of that match. Props to him. So, yeah. Going back in, Kelly Quinn, I hate your hair. I hate that you have that reverse mushroom thing. I know you're a great competitor, but, and I'm such an old curmudgeon. I want you to have a regular haircut. I'm sorry. I love you as a person, but your haircut bothers me. I wish you would just let it down or cut it or something. You're not a samurai.
He does finish an outstanding flying triangle, though.
In like 30 negative 40 seconds. 7 seconds. It was so fast.
Beautiful. You know, jumps it, locks it in, takes him to the ground, makes a couple adjustments to it, and then gets the tap.
Yeah. So at this point, now moving on to the next match, Vanessa Griffin from Crazy 88. Again, here comes another Lloyd person. Versus Brittany Elkins from The Compound. Don't know where that is. We should do more research and figure out where all these gyms are. At this point, I'm walking around in a pair of short shorts and a jacket, talking to people and trying not to cry because I'm a little child that didn't get his way. So take it away, main on that one.
Yeah, Brittany is 8-2 in Fight to Win. It's a good match. She's going against two-time Pan American champion and two-time world champion Vanessa, who...
Now that I think back onto it, Brittany actually works for Fight to Win, if I'm not mistaken.
The compound is out of Colorado.
There we go. Yep. So boom. Yes. So she works for them. She runs her cameras, does some other stuff underneath the mat. I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure she fights MMA too. Took a really short notice fight right before a Fight to Win as well and won that one. So props to her. I'm just, you know, I do 8 billion things all the time and I can't remember anything unless it's obscure about some 1980s movie.
Yep. Vanessa wins, a very technical guard pass, finishes a Kimura from the top. Good match overall. If you're going to watch a match on the card, it's definitely one to take a look at.
Absolutely.
On a match 17.
Gary Gianni, which people kept saying Gianni. There is no A in there. It's Gianni. From Pedro Sours versus Nicholas First from Demetrius Christos Jiu-Jitsu, which is an affiliate of Revolution BJJ in Virginia. No Gary. Haven't competed against him. Talk to him every once in a while. Say what's up to him when we are out and about. He loves the legs. He loves attacking the legs. And that was very evident throughout the entire match. He was hunting. Toe holds. He does this small little variation on foot locks. It's not exactly a straight foot lock. It's not an Estima lock, but he just does this different angle. He loves going belly down on it to finish it, attacking the arm bars. Not saying that Nicholas Frust, I think it was First. They might have misspelled it on the card, but we'll go with, I'm going to say First because I'm a jerk. Also hunting. He wanted the back, something fierce, kept rolling under, didn't give any cares about his feet being taken off, anything like that. He just went and went and went, kept trying for the back, kept going through. Gary tried to pull a triangle super early in the match. He started to try to pass, pinning it down. It was a good, good match, but Gary was just a beat ahead of him. And this is further proof that people can't get mad when people spell the name Gary differently with one or two R's. So you can't get mad when somebody spells Gary Tonin with one R because Gary can be spelled multiple ways. But this is Gary Gianni. Also plays with the feet. Awesome. He wins by decision.
Really good match as well.
Excellent. Going on to match 18. Yes, that's match 18. There's still 13 more matches, including this one.
This is the last of the brown belt matches. After this, we're going to move into the black belt matches.
Yes, indeed. This is Josh Pike from Atos versus Jared Chumley from Tiger Shark BJJ. Again, I'm moving around, so... Maine is going to fill you in on some of these things. I'm bouncing around, talking to people, making sure everybody's warm, geeking out about people wearing pro wrestling t-shirts, things like that. Talking to one of my sponsors, which I, you know, not that I felt obligated to, but, you know, he helped get me there. So I'm going to talk to him, even though he did not remove his eyes from the mat pretty much the entire night.
So this match was the first slam of the night.
Big slam.
Yeah, nice slam. You know, that's like to see that in the rule set. I always like to see slams being utilized when they're available. Just kind of remind you where BJJ comes from and that, you know, you can't just let someone lift you up. We have Josh Pike from Atos. He rolls through for a nice armbar. Super smooth for the finish. Again, a good match, good slam.
All right, now comes black belts, and they started off with the big boys, and they also used the smallest ref to ref what was announced as 550 pounds in the ring, and you got a 115-pound ref to ref the match. So essentially, it was like sumo wrestlers and a child in the match. So you have Kim Sturdivant, I think I'm saying that right, from A-Force versus Jeff Manalanson from Pedro Sour. I am familiar with both of these guys because I was fat at one point. I actually just recently rolled with Kim. He rolled into our gym a couple of weeks ago. You know, heavy pressure passing game, good guard game. And my very first brown belt match was actually against Jeff Manalanson at, again, super heavyweight. He was close to 300 pounds at that point. I was close to 300 pounds at that point. it was good. I knew I was going to have better cardio, and I had a really tight gi on purpose because I knew he knew judo. So I didn't want him grabbing on and doing anything with that. And it took a while, but I got the finish on that. Not poo-pooing on Jeff's skills. Jeff has great skills. He gets out there, supports a good cause. He's a rep for Mission 22. Check him out if you ever see him. Super friendly dude. Good referee as well. It was a heavyweight match. What do you expect? Somebody to run into somebody and either take them down or yank them down, which is what happened. Kim grabbed that gi and hit a hard snap down. And from there, he just kept the pressure on top, kept the pressure on. And Jeff, you know, kept the arms in tight, kept the defense going, and just put his hand in the wrong place. And Kim just nailed a wrist lock off of it. Super, super, super tight. Knocked it in and called it a day. Going on, tinier black belts now, no gi match. Scott Dance from District Martial Arts versus Daniel Keene from Alliance. Daniel also swings in our gym regularly, comes and trains. Solid dude, good game. Very back and forth. It was a hard one to call. I wasn't gonna, you know, my experience would make me lean towards Daniel just because I trained with him, but that's why I wasn't, you know, one of the referees picking who won. It was a lot of good back and forth. Maine, do you have anything else to fill in on that one?
No, good back and forth match overall. Nice standing guillotine attempts from Danny. Always excited to see guys go for the sub on the feet. Good back and forth match. Eventually Scott shoots for a straight ankle lock and, doesn't quite finish it. Time runs out. Ends up winning the decision over Danny there.
Yep. Going through again now, back into the gi. Marcelo Matos from Tiger Shark versus Matt Schellenschlager from Conquest. Again, surprise. Another person that I know and I've trained with before. The week before the Baltimore card, the Frederick card, Maryland card, whatever you want to call it, Matt was a late replacement against Wilson Hayes. And got caught. If you haven't seen it, you can find it somewhere on YouTube or flowgrappling.com and check out Fight to Win 52 from Philly. Matt got caught in a Kimura that I don't know how he didn't tap to it. That was the previous week versus Wilson Hayes, but he said, suck it, I'm going to keep competing anyway, and went in there and did his thing, you know.
Mateos pulls guard, transitions to a toe hold, Matt escapes. There's really a lot of technical grip fighting that happens in this match. Eventually they land in 50-50, match gets reset. A lot of technical groundwork, some knee cuts for Matt, goes for an ankle lock, and then Matt
Schellenschlager
ends up winning the decision at the end. Again, another good match. This whole card was full of just fantastic matchups and matchups.
Fantastic.
From each competitor. If you want to rewatch the event, you know, I would highly recommend it. It was just fantastic.
Flowgrappling.com. We're not paid by them, but, you know, don't be a jerk and steal it.
Technically Josh's.
You know, whatever.
But he competes.
Flow Grappling doesn't pay Fight to Win. Fight to Win pays Fight to Win. Moving on, gi match again. Here comes another one. Cesar Paredes. Again, I'm Cesar. I don't know. Cesar, whatever it is, from Pedro Sauer versus what is on the program is Colin Stewart. That is not his name. And what it is on Facebook is it looks like it's Colan Stubard. I'm pretty sure he's got awesome foreign parents that named him awesomely, but Colin Stewart is way easier to say, so we'll go with that. Colin randomly showed up at our gym one day and was like, hey, I used to train here. Can I come to your open mats? And nobody was upset that he showed up. Solid black belt, Hobbs Memorial lineage, is out of Philly, his teacher. This match was awesome, and what I found out later was Colin was not too happy that Cesar gave him bunny ears at the weigh-ins. They went to take a picture, and Colin was being the nicest dude ever, because that's what he is, and just, you know, did the whole hand around the waist, what's up, bro, kind of, we're going to take this picture. And Cesar gave him bunny ears, and that apparently pissed Colin off.
Colin came out looking very intense for the match and for the duration of the match, really.
He never looks that way. This is a guy that always has a smile on his face, always ready to train, have fun. It's super complimentary, even if you just suck the entire round and he gracefully didn't beat the ever-loving shit out of you. Super sweet guy. But he just looked pissed. And he hit an awesome foot sweep. And from there, just gave him the business. Passed the guard, went through, just buried all that chest hair, that hamburger meat in Cesar's face for the entirety of the match. People were getting pissed that it wasn't moving. And I'm just, you know, yelling, giving instructions. And again, I was told, who from Baltimore BJJ is yelling out what I'm about to do? Stop doing that. And I'm looking at the match and knowing Colin's game a little bit, I was like, why isn't he doing this armbar? Why isn't he doing this armbar that's been here for 4.5 minutes? Well, with about 10 seconds left, he transitions, nails the armbar, finishes it, and just mean mugs it. I'm like, damn, Colin is a gangster. And he just went in, shook hands, you know, went about his business, very polite, went through and did his thing. Yeah. But whew.
You want to look at a match for how to hold north-south and how to just have outstanding top pressure and control. Oh, this is a match to watch.
Beautiful. Cesar was both feet in the lapel trying to launch him forward, and Colin was having none of it. He was not budging. He didn't feel like moving. He essentially did the physical equivalent of or naw to Cesar the entire match until he tapped him. Moving on to the 125-pound black belt Nogi match, disclaimer, Joshua Peters from CP MMA has never been 125 pounds in his entire life unless he's wearing all of his clothes and a backpack with bricks in them.
And has his keys in his pocket. Notoriously, Josh Peters weighs in jeans with his keys in his pocket and still weighs below 125, you know, but always
Josh
game,
Peters
always
is
shows
a,
up.
Is a small man. He goes by the Hebrew Hammer because he is a Jew. But I am almost 100% positive his nickname should be Gollum. That is no offense to him. Again, somebody I know and I've competed against. Yes, I was a fat guy in the absolute division competing against a 115-pound man. It was amusing. He yelled Leroy Jenkins at me. He was versus Christopher Tran from Crazy 88. And again, surprise, guess what? Christopher Tran, boom, off the bat, just starts going at it. A lot of, you know, movement. And at that point, again, I had to disappear. So leave it to Maine to be sitting ringside and fill in the rest of the details from there.
Yeah, really good match. Christopher Tran is actually a Nogi Pan American champion. So, you know, you look at the credentials that comes with that. Josh Peters pulls guard initially. Tran goes for a knee cut, ends up in top quarter guard. Peters passes and shoots a leg lock.
Yeah, Chris Tran just turned on the next gear after Peters, you know, was going at it and just stayed a step above. That's no knock on Josh Peters. I've watched him at a Naga one time hang in there and, you know, really make Jameel Hill, who is, again, way bigger than him, have to work. Now, Jameel Hill, again, somebody that, you know, went at it with Cobrinha and made it. My personal opinion, I think Cobrinha was gifted that decision in that fight. But that's neither here nor there. Jameel is legit, and we'll just go with that.
Match ends with both of them shooting mirrored heel hook attempts, and then the time runs out.
And Tran takes the decision. Moving on to, again, larger gentlemen. 215 black belt gi match. Ken Brown, who was way more than 215 a couple years ago, from Second Gear Jiu-Jitsu, and that's not a knock on him. Good for him to getting down that low. He used to be big, yeah, like me.
Kenneth Brown is actually the 2013 European champion.
I think he's taken some world's placings as well. Ken is a serious competitor, seriously nice dude as well. And he took on Isaac July Jr. from Big Brother Jiu-Jitsu, who is a very intimidating coach. I was a referee and he was coaching, and man, I may have thought about peeing in my pants before while he was yelling in excitement. Very intense dude. and a very intense match. Ken Brown is known for his deep half guard. That's what he does, and you would not expect a 200-plus pound man that isn't, you know, isn't a world champion Brazilian guy doing deep half. You know, you think, okay, Bernardo Faria, that's who I think of as deep half with big dudes. Ken Brown's right there. Ken Brown is serious business with his deep half and immediately started attacking. Isaac was going after it. He was moving and grooving, you know, almost got passed through. Ken continually looking for sweeps. Eventually knocks him down, but Isaac goes, hits a beautiful butterfly sweep. Beautiful butterfly sweep to get back on top. It was just a lot of back and forth. And if you wanted to look up a picture of somebody that had no fucks to give, Ken Brown's face would be there, because it looked like he not only was he chewing a piece of gum, but he just looked like he was taking a stroll in the park, and he just was going. He almost getting closer towards the end of the match, nailed another deep half. July just bounced off of it and turned it around and came up. I mean, it was very, very back and forth and very grip dependent, moving around and technical. It was a beautiful match to watch. And Isaac goes to pass in the dying seconds of the match, and Ken immediately starts to shoot up an armbar. It was close, and maybe because of where I was, it looked like Isaac was winning. I'm not going to say he won or not, because again, I have a terrible case of ADD. I start moving around because I'm super fidgety, which you'll hear on the recording of me tapping on everything. But it was the decision went to Ken Brown, but I'm not mad at that at all. It was a great match. One of the best matches on the card, showcasing that big guys can move and they're not boring. So hats off to both of them. Yes. Excellent match. Moving on.
Match 25.
25. That's right, folks. We're at 25 and we're still not done. 185 black belt no-gi match. Dave Porter, Pedro Sauer versus Ty Murphy. Crazy 88.
Another Lloyd guy. You know, this card had a lot of Lloyd guys
stacked
on
stacked up and down with Lloyd dudes. And it shouldn't be a surprise. You know, it's Maryland. That's where Lloyd is based out of. Those guys are going to get on the card. The main event and co-main event, two of those guys were from Lloyd's. The, you know, no-gi champion in that weight class is DJ Jackson from Lloyd's. So, of course, you're going to get a lot of those people supporting. They always bring tons of guys. If you've ever been at Worlds or any of the bigger tournaments, you're going to have Lloyd's cheering section. You're going to have those guys. They're yelling. They're carrying on. They're supporting their team members. Again, purely jiu-jitsu. I'm not talking about anything else. I don't want to hear about your opinions. Those are things that you can discuss elsewhere. We're literally just talking about jiu-jitsu. So, no politics, just jiu-jitsu. Great match, a lot of good tying up, good wrestling. Porter is known for his darces, his, you know, solid positional fundamentals, but also, you know, some crazier positions too. Murphy also, you know, super explosive, known for having a high pace, you know, really pushing it. Again, good fundamentals, and that's how it went. And, you know, he stayed one step ahead. That's where it went. There were some good submission attempts and things like that, but Ty stayed up. Main, your thoughts on that one?
No, everything you said, you know, both guys really explosive, moving, high-paced match. It was, there was a lot of back and forth, and, you know, Ty wins the decision.
Yeah, it was a good fight. David is a super active competitor. So is Ty. I just happened to run into Dave way more. And as he talked about, you know, he said, you know, he wasn't upset that he lost. I mean, you're always bummed when you lose, but it was a good match. It's nothing to be upset about. Getting into the female part of the card, the ladies were going after it. that's one of the things too that I appreciate is they're putting the ladies on the matches and they're getting up there in the card and they're working it. And sometimes the female matches are way, 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 way more exciting than the male matches. So this is a 170-pound black belt gi match. Maria Maliesic, I'm going to assume that's right, from Amar Barbosa Jiu-Jitsu. Think that's Amar's girlfriend, fiance, something like that. I know they are connected at least in a relationship. Versus Maya Matalon from 50-50 Jiu-Jitsu in Virginia. Ryan Hall, obviously.
And Maya is a 2015 world champion.
And Maria is a four-time world champion, I'm guessing, throughout the belts. I don't recall that she won a black belt world title, but again, we kind of slacked on extra note-taking, so we'll look that up and probably put it in the footnotes that, hey, yes, she was, or no, she wasn't. And it's no, to get a world championship at any belt level is impressive anyway. But they also didn't announce that she was black belt world champion. So I think they were smart with the wording. If she wasn't, if she was, hats off to her, because that's pure beast mode. Maria pulled guard almost immediately, and Maya just started punching through, trying to get through. Passed, but got a leg caught up, almost got caught in something, transitioned around, a lot of movement. Maria played a lot of guard, just played guard, just kept moving and going, and Maya kept trying to pass and everything, and Maya just made that one tiny mistake, and Maria transitioned over, grabbed the leg, and just finished the knee bar, and grabbed her at about 4 minutes in, I would say, something like that. Oops. Yeah. So it was a good match, and I think Maya just made a slight mistake and got caught. There was nothing to knock about it. It was still a really good card. Or a really good match, excuse me.
We're back.
So listed it was supposed to be the female black belt flyweight title, but they thought better of it and put the title match after regular match. So listed as match 27 was the black belt flyweight title match female, but actually the 155-pound black belt gi match with Jameel Hill from Team Lloyd Irvin versus Joseph Overstreet from Noel Smith BJJ. Awesome match. I told Maine, I know he was taking notes, but I told him to look at the technical aspect of it more so than the match itself. And what Jameel was doing with his grip placement and how he was pressuring Joe's legs to get around and move and to help Jameel keep himself at least one step ahead of anything Joseph was doing. You know, he just had the beat on him from the get-go. And again, attack, 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 fast, and just on the move immediately. And Jameel just stayed up, stayed up, stayed up, stayed up, stayed up, was consistently pushing. And that's no knock against Joe. Joe was, you know, game, was staying in there. He was trying to attack and go, but just kept getting beaten to that next position every single time. And eventually Jameel ended up on the back. Did he get caught in the sub? I thought
he gets caught with a sub.
I thought the time had ended and they just stopped, so maybe, you know, I got a little fuzzy on that, but
it could be. The notes I have, it looks like Shane takes top mount and finishes the choke from the top.
Okay, yeah. Because that's where he was, and I thought time had just run out. Yeah. But I was so just deep into watching hand and foot placement and how he was cutting across and how he was moving the gi and how he was pinning different appendages down to even be paying attention to the amount of time that was on there or not. And I mean, it was just a beautiful display of jiu-jitsu. Fantastic match.
Yeah, Shane, Jamal Hill is a really highlight reel guy. If you go onto YouTube, you can find a number of, you know, highlights with him at Worlds, and his matches, highly active, lots of transitions, and always hunting for a dominant position. You know, great match overall.
Beautiful match. So then again, switching back, now we're going to the female black belt flyweight title, with Array Alexander from Team Lloyd Irvine versus Talita Alencar from Alliance Cobrinha. Talita, world champion at black belt, you know, beast competitor. I know Lloyd puts out great women. I hadn't heard of Array at all, and that might be my fault for not just paying attention. So my first assumption was, okay, Talita's going to take this. But I just watched, and Array just looked bigger than Talita, and I was like, this might actually be interesting. And man, barn burner. Talita came out hard and heavy at first and, you know, did what Lloyd's people had been doing all night and, you know, came out hard and heavy and just started moving, trying to pass from over under, trying to pass from double unders, just trying to move.
Some of the wardrobe was interesting in this
match.
There
were several wardrobe malfunctions. Sometimes that's just uncomfortable. As a female competitor, I couldn't say. That'd be something more for Maine's girlfriend to let you know what you need to wear. But she felt that some of the wardrobe choices were not that smart, and that's why these slight wardrobe malfunctions were happening. Talita did have a great grip on the pants and started pulling, and what happens when pants come down all the time.
But credit to the ref, you know.
Credit to the ref for stopping it, keeps
the grip,
pulling up the pants,
fixes
the pants,
kept
the grip, things like that. You know, the top started moving a little bit. We had a little bit of fix on that. Kept up on it. The thing was, Talita started slowing down later in the match, and that's when Array started really turning it on. And if I'm saying her name wrong, I apologize.
I believe that's how they said it on the thing.
Okay.
Now, Alexander Array is, they said, I think she was a 5- or 6-time world champion. I'm not sure at what level
going probably
she's a world
again
champion.
Through the belts. Probably blue, you purple, know. Brown. I don't recall her winning a black belt. I think she's a new black belt. But again, I could be wrong too. But I think
looks
it's
fantastic.
Through the belts. She was on the move, and she kept that same pace throughout the entire match, and she was just push. Talita was visibly tired. You could see that she was like, let's finish this, which led to Array snagging an omoplata and just looking for something, looking to try to finish near the end of the match. She did not get it, you know, more transitioning everything, and she was pushing. Time went. And, you know, based on the first 70% of the match, Talita took the title, but hopefully Array will be back on the scene. Great competitor. She was really moving and grooving. Great to watch. And shows that she can keep up with the top of the heap when it comes to female jiu-jitsu. So look forward to seeing her in future matches and looking out for her in tournaments that are played either online or on floor or whatever.
Yeah, if you're going to rewatch a match from this event, I would highly recommend rewatch this match. It was just a fantastic back and forth, and really shows, you know, the top level female jiu-jitsu in the world. I'd highly recommend rewatch this match.
Yeah. Now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of the nitty-gritty. Co-main event, black belt, gi, heavyweight title, Tim Spriggs, Team Lloyd Irvine, versus Leonardo Nogueira from Alliance. Nogueira, world champion. Spriggs, certified man machine. The dude is a monster. Both are monsters. And this match went, and what happened with Spriggs? Did what every other Lloyd guy was doing. Came out hard.
He threw a Marote Sayonagi over and over as hard as I've ever seen anyone throw.
And he calls that, he calls it the train wreck, and he does it all the time.
It's his highlight reel takedown.
Always, and he dumps dudes, and Leo was no exception. He was throwing him, but Leo was just quick on the uptake and kept popping back up before he'd get down, or Tim didn't finish it all the way. But Tim, throughout the entire match, first of all, didn't look like he was in a match because he didn't look that sweaty, which surprised me. For the amount of like working and gripping and all that other stuff, he didn't look tired at all. And Nogueira looked visibly fatigued in part of the match at a certain point, and, you know, started, you had the glisten of the sweat and everything. Tim didn't look tired. He looked like it was just another day of training in the gym. And he just kept pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing.
Really huge pace on this match. And, you know, the majority of the match was contested on the feet. And you just saw Spriggs get the gi grips and then do that train wreck throw over and over and shoot for it over and over and just push the pace on the feet. Never really making a lull in the action. That you just re-grip and then go again.
And repeatedly almost threw himself and Nogueira into the table that a lot of my teammates were sitting at, which was amusing.
I almost got landed on
at
one point.
Maine is now a very large man. He looks like a 16-year-old boy, actually. So, yeah, a 16-year-old child trying to catch two giant men would have been hilarious. Also,
there's a picture of it
somewhere. Some of our female gym goers as well. At one point, look like they tried to catch, and then afterwards were definitely running for the hills every time they would come over. I mean, that's probably another good almost 400 pounds of people flying towards a table. And it's hilarious because I understand why you're not going to make a barrier, because then it starts to look like boxing or pro wrestling and you have to deal with athletic commissions and things like that. This is still technically jiu-jitsu and you don't have to deal with it. As far as I know, in most states, I don't think Maryland really has anything to do with that when it comes to that.
I don't believe there's any commission sanctioning for these events. Now, the only interesting thing that I think is that it's technically a pro event. You do have payouts for wins, so that's the only thing where I think you potentially could have some commission involvement in, but it's a super fight, technically, and there's no striking. And commissions tend to not care unless there's striking involved.
I don't really think they have anything to do with what is still, yes, it's a professional event, but it's an amateur sport. I don't know. It's a weird line that they walk, but it works, and it's awesome.
And only at one point in the entire event did we have someone come off the mats, and they fell onto kind of the walkout area, the little raised area. Over 30 matches, it wasn't really a problem. The refs were very good on the resets, making sure that they stopped the action at appropriate times. And, you know, no one fell off, but it's just something going forward that, you know, might be considered later down the line.
I don't think they're planning on doing it unless they really, really have to.
It wasn't a problem for this event.
It wasn't really a problem. And honestly, if you're sitting up against the ring, you need to know that, hey, that might happen. But again, Spriggs' continual pressure was what won him the match. And it was decision. And I actually picked him to win. I was like, pretty sure Spriggs is going to take this match. And he did.
Hometown.
I don't think it was even a hometown-like decision. I don't think it should have been a split decision, which it was. It was definitely his match to lose, and he didn't lose it. And Nogueira just, I don't think, was ready for that continual forward pressure of Spriggs. And Spriggs is someone that I watch. When he pops up, I watch those matches because it's always going to be exciting. You know, whoever it is, no matter what you're doing, if you have an issue with the person's team or if you have an issue with that competitor, you still end up watching their matches to see what's going on. Look at not Muhammad Ali, who was also part of Team Lloyd Irvin, who's
coaching at the event.
Who was coaching, who's a beast. What's his name? Who switches teams every 2 months.
Dennis.
Herbert Santos, not Dylan Danis. I don't care about Dylan Danis at all. In the world of jiu-jitsu, he's done nothing in the gi that I care about, nor in no gi. That's neither here nor there. But Herbus Santos, a lot of people don't like him. A lot of jiu-jitsu people don't like him because he jumps ship all the time, because he's got a bad attitude, whatever. I say fuck that. You watch that dude's matches, it's fucking awesome. The way I explain his matches, there is always at least several times I say fuck, because the dude is just on another level of fuckery when it comes to jiu-jitsu, the guy throws caution to the wind and just goes for it, and it's something beautiful to watch. And competitors that have that are enjoyable to watch. Even competitors that do things that you don't like, that do Barambola, that do 50-50, that do worm guard, that do whatever that bothers the shit out of you on a certain day or whatever. I don't like this because it's boring. When they throw caution to the wind and they just do shit, it's awesome. That's what makes jiu-jitsu awesome. And that's what made this match between Tim Spriggs and Leo Nogueira awesome. Tim gave less than zero fucks. -5 fucks. And just went after a world champion and said, I'm going to try to throw you and I'm going to try to beat the shit out of you. So hats off to Tim.
Now is the he is now the black belt gi heavyweight title holder for Fight to Win Pro.
Which will be awesome. Lots of cool matches on the horizons with that, I feel. We could have a potential Herbert Santos if they decide to pull him in. There could be, if they can somehow convince, let's see, Lowe, who's now at that weight, you know, Nicholas Mergali, Keenan Cornelius.
Yeah, there's some really fantastic matchups to be made.
So many matchups, heavyweight-wise, that you could bring up that would be just must-see jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and Fight to Win seems to be doing it. I mean, if this card is any indication of the level of talent that they are committed to bringing, you know, to the stage, you know, we have, I want to say, you know, 20-plus world champions, not world champion, world champion finishes on this card alone. You know, guys with 3 and 4 and 2 world championships competing on this event at various levels.
They're pulling guys in, and it's great that they are doing that. And, you know, whether they're spending a ton of money to put them on, I don't care. And they don't care either because they're putting these on consistently. You've got former UFC guys. You've got world champions, current and past. You've just got people that want to compete, and it's only a win for everybody that watches jiu-jitsu.
Fantastic. In gi and no-gi, which is great because there's been more recently less and less gi events being showcased.
And I'm one of those people that will tell you to go fuck yourself that you think gi jiu-jitsu is boring. Even the most boring of gi jiu-jitsu matches has so much intricacy in it and detail to just show you. So when people start complaining about it, unless it's literally somebody pulls guard and they don't do anything else, even then, I can't even say that because the one guy couldn't pass guard. And there's got to be a reason why the guy couldn't pass guard. So you have to go back and watch the match again and see all the details. Even if it's 20 fucking minutes, like, you're going to pick those things out. Or that's what I do because I'm a dork when it comes to that. And it really piques my interest. I'm going to stop rambling now. Let's go to the main event. Black belt, no-gi, middleweight title. DJ Jackson, Team Lloyd Irvin versus Gilbert Dorino Burns, who is now Zenith BJJ under Drysdale, used to be Atos, I think used to be something else as well. Currently fights in the UFC, still took the time off to come to Maryland. And compete. Former world champion, no gi world champion, high level dude. DJ, no gi world champion. Pretty sure he's got world championships at the colored belts. Like,
oh yeah,
is a fire hydrant of a human being. Like,
the fact that he's 85 just is baffling to me, given his stature.
I think he competes at that. I think he fights MMA at 70. But again, He's a large individual for not being very tall. He's big. He's a big human being. His walkout song got stuck in my head for 2 days.
He walks out to that, Go DJ by Big Timers.
Yeah, that bothered. That was the only thing that bothered me.
I love that song.
Song got fucking stuck in my head. So I'm randomly walking around going, Go DJ. That's my DJ. And I was like, oh, God.
Fantastic match.
Great match. Some of my friends were making side bets on who would win, and I somehow got duped against betting against DJ. And against my better judgment, I bet against Burns. DJ in these type of matches always has the advantage. I would never go against that. He's beaten countless dudes, countless ways, and just knows how to game people. And, you know, some people might think that's boring. He took his time, pressured, kept a world champion jiu-jitsu player down and unable to do anything. There was one time where he could have got caught, could have. But he pulled his T-Rex limbs out of it and called it a day. And that's not a knock on DJ. I also have T-Rex limbs. I am also short and stumpy. But he really maximizes it. Just went after it, takedowns, staying on top, heavy pressure, you know, trying for the Kimura, trying to go around, just whatever. And Dorino didn't really have an answer for that, you know, didn't really fully kick it in until like the last 30 seconds where he was going to try to do something, but it was already too late. And DJ just rode that all the way through. And it's, you know, he took the decision win and people go, well, it's what he normally does. No, his last like two or three fight to win fights, he's won by submission. So you can't say, oh, he doesn't do anything, because he submitted people. I think he neck cranked the last guy, and he submitted somebody with like a Kimura before that. This was just, you know, he didn't get the chance because he's going against a super high level dude. And that guy just happened to keep himself, you know, in tight and away. But it was a good fight and a good end to a great card.
Yeah, DJ Jackson retains 185-pound title.
125 pounds in his pants.
Via split decision. You know, it was overall just a fantastic card. And
great top to bottom.
Yeah. The level of talent, the matchups, even, you know, from purple belt all the way up to the black belt matches, these guys put a card together that was absolutely fantastic. One of the best grappling cards I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. Again, earlier throwback to one of the guys that helped sponsor me and, you know, got a bunch of people to go to it. He's super fidgety and normally doesn't pay attention to something more than a couple minutes. And anytime I looked over at him, whether I was up in the warm-up changing area or off to the side, his eyes were glued to the match. He didn't turn away from the mat. Like, he was solely focused for 30 matches on the mat area. So what does that tell you about the jiu-jitsu in general? Even if it was a boring match, even if it was, you know, Kamal Shalarus running away and not doing anything, he watched the match. And again, Seth, his entire team, all those people, you know, as they call themselves, Team No Sleep, who worked tirelessly to put on these matches. It's awesome. I can't, you know, hats off to them. If you're looking for a pro event to either go to or be a part of, I'm going to point to Fight to Win every single time. Like, they, the production, the way they treat the competitors, everything, you know, the professionalism that's extended to you as, you know, until you compete, you know, you, especially if you're just a random hobbyist, but you get to be on one of these cards, until you compete and get that money, you're not a pro, but it makes you feel like this is how a pro does it. It makes you, you know, you're working. They want you to sell tickets because they want to pay you more money. Like, if it sells out, you get more money. So why wouldn't that give you an incentive to sell more tickets? You know, to get more people interested in jiu-jitsu, to get more people to come. You know, I got my brother to come. My brother wasn't going to come. I was like, bro, let's go. And he came, and he was like, that was awesome. He had to leave early because he had to be to work early the next day. But he's like, dude, thank you for getting me to come to this. I really appreciate this. My wife, I've been with my wife for 14 years. She went to one tournament one time when I started and was like, I'm not going to do this again because that shit's boring. And I was like, totally get it. And she came to a tournament like last year during the summer, but that was to take the kids to the beach when it was right outside of the tournament venue. She was like, I'm not watching this. This shit's boring. And I get it. And she sat there and she watched it and talked with people that talked about jiu-jitsu. And she was like, that was really good. And it was exciting. And I liked it. She didn't say it was boring. So again, what does that tell you? that it's exciting. Support jiu-jitsu. Support the things that are good for jiu-jitsu. Support the companies that support jiu-jitsu. You know, again, shout out to Seth and all of the people that, you know, run Fight to Win. Shout out to Fight to Win. Shout out to Flow Grappling for picking it up and letting more people see it. You know, getting those people out. And if you're part of the Flow Network and you're watching it for wrestling technique or softball or CrossFit or lifting heavy things or swimming or gymnastics or rock climbing, all of these things that I've watched on the Flow Sports Network before, and I'm not ashamed to talk about it. Go to Flow Grappling and watch it. Find something. It's pretty interesting. Start training jiu-jitsu. You know, there's not much more I'm going to say about it that's not going to be completely fucking redundant and isn't me just like gushing like a fangirl over something. But, you know, I'm always down to support something that I believe in, and it's what I believe in. If you run into me and you say, hey, what about this tournament? What do you think of this? I'm going to say either A, yeah, go for it. It's a great idea. Or B, fuck that. It's shit. Don't support that garbage. And it's already happening, but people are trying to bite off of the Fight to Win, you know, game plan and format and use it and essentially make money off of it. But they're just going to end up shitting the bed because I don't think they have the passion that Fight to Win has for it. I'm going to stop rambling about it and I'll let Maine finish anything that he has to say about it and has.
Yeah.
So
in other news, International Judo Federation has changed some rules. Some people are very upset about this, rightfully so.
Fuck the IJF. They're dumb. What's funny is it's International Judo Federation. It's mostly run by French people, so it's not really international. It should just be called the French Judo Federation.
Which also exists.
Yeah, but they're essentially the same thing.
Basically. They've made some changes.
You should have different precedents. And they made some dumb fucking changes. Go on, Maine.
Basically, they've changed. Well, one change I don't think is as dumb is they've changed leg grabs. So basically, if you brush the legs accidentally, you no longer get DQ'd for it. It's not a shishito, which is basically just a negative penalty point.
That's a shido, not a shishito, which is a pepper. But yeah, so here. So instead of us instantly DQing you, we're just going to say, stop, start over, here's a penalty, and eventually you'll get DQ'd. Because guess what? We don't like people that know how to do these awesome fucking techniques that look awesome, that touch your legs. Yeah, okay, I'm going to be bummed out if a whole bunch of wrestlers come into judo and just start shooting double legs and blasting into people. But, you know, the only thing it did in judo, they're like, oh, it's to make judo more exciting. It didn't fucking make judo more exciting. Judo's been always exciting. You just took out some techniques that you couldn't do. You know, you can't do leg wheels anymore. You can't be Dr. Roddy Ferguson and pick fucking dudes up and launch them. That shit was awesome. But you still have guys throwing Sayonagis, Hirai Goshis, you know, all sorts of Uchimatas, all these things, you know, people doing sacrifice throws, you know, all sorts of stuff. You still have that, but now you're like, yeah, don't do that. We don't like that. Here, don't grab this.
For anyone wondering, IJF banned leg grabs in about 2010.
I thought it was 2008, but still, whatever it was fucking stupid. It muddled this sport even more. And we're trying to make it more exciting. Motherfucker, you know who watches judo? People that do judo and people that like grappling. Like, nobody else watches judo. You know why people watch swimming? Because it's on the fucking Olympics. If it wasn't on the Olympics, the only people that would like swimming are people that swim. Segueing back, IJF also changed the golden rule score. And, you know, as Maine so eloquently put it, the shishitos...
Why you gotta call it out?
I'm gonna call you out. You can score off of bullshit throws now. So again, trying to make things more exciting, when you fart and knock somebody over, you get a point, and you can win that way if you do that more than once.
basically what used to be a lesser throw.
Used to be an advantage. Used to be an advantage, essentially, in jiu-jitsu, and now you can win by fucking advantages. Eat shit. This is the part of where we're not going to be serious, and I'm just going to yell at people and tell them to eat shit.
Reasonable. Any upcoming events that you're looking forward to?
Fight to Win next week. I think the Brazilian Nationals in like 2 weeks.
Ricardo, you're touching on both those.
Ooh, not the Brazilian Nationals. It's the Abu Dhabi Grand Slam in Brazil. That's what that one is.
That's exciting.
That's fucking awesome. For all you super nerds that are into all forms of grappling, the next sumo tournament starts next week. I will talk about that. Fuck you.
Yokozuna.
That's a WWF wrestler. That's not also a singular person. That's right. I know all about their shit. There's four of them right now. I can talk to you.
The first Japanese one in about 20 years, so that's exciting.
That's only because you saw that shit on the internet that you know about that. The other three are fucking Mongolian. Only two of them really fucking count, because the other two are... The Japanese one is eh. The one Mongolian one, I don't even know. That guy should retire. One of them's hit or miss sometimes, and the other one is the fucking god of sumo. He's literally the best sumo guy ever. And argue with me about it, because I'll tell you you're wrong and tell you you're dumb. Actually, I might talk about that in 2 weeks after the entire tournament is over. But still, I love sumo. If you want to keep up with sumo, go into Sure Dog. They have a thread that follows it. Go on YouTube and follow Jason's All Sumo channel or Kenta Miyama's sumo channel for highlights, or NHK. They post highlights in English,
which is great. NHK does a really good job for English viewers.
Main frequently would message me and be like, what do you think of this? What's going on? And I'm like, bro, this is what's happening. I don't give a shit about none of this right now. And then we start talking about, you know, weird things like Egyptian sumo wrestlers and fat Mongolian dudes that look like giant babies that came out with tons of hype and now just shit the bed. Again, I am a fucking dork when it comes to a lot of these grappling things. Don't get me started on pro wrestling. I still watch it. Yes, I'm a giant baby that likes men in spandex tights.
So that'll do it for this. That'll do it for this episode of the Grappling Rewind.
Thanks for listening to our ramblings.
If you have any questions, we don't have an email address at this time,
but we'll have one.
Suck it. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Grappling Rewind. We'll be back next week with another episode.